Blog Talk Radio.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين. الرحمن الرحيم. مالك يوم الدين. إياك نعبد وإياك نستعين. اهدنا الصراط المستقيم. صراط الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Latifa A. Hameen, the CEO for American Muslim 360, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice is protected.
The views expressed by the host guests are their own and not necessarily the position of AM360 or the parent corporation, the Community-Wide Shura Conference, CWSC Incorporated. AM360 content is intended as a community service and is not designed to provide specific personal, medical, financial, or legal counsel or other professional advice, and no liability shall extend to the hosts or hostesses of AM360 or CWSC. We encourage you to seek an advisor for your specific circumstance. Now Joshua fought the battle of Jericho,
and the walls came tumbling down. Community-Wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360 invites you to promote your organization or event on the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. Affordable rates allow you to promote your event, product, or service and strengthen our national intelligentsia network. Contact corporate underwriting today at info@cwsc.us. That's info@cwsc.us. Or call 910-317-0297. Again, 910-317-0297. Together we can remake the world.
Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of Critical Issues, where we look at the issues of today and see how they affect our daily lives. Last week, our subject was the three decisions that is made in every situation. And we had a nice conversation with our listening audience in that, and we're going to continue that subject today because we think it's such a big subject and it needs to be expanded there. So we talked about the moral issue of being morally correct. And after that, which is the first decision and the most important decision in making the decision in the situation. And secondly, economically expedient and political or social expedient. And when we make decisions based on this area and in this order, then we'll find out that our results will be a lot better. But if we start from the bottom up and then try to look at number one as number three, then we may have, and normally we will have, some problems. But at this time, we're going to bring in Dr. Jamal Rashid. As-salamu alaykum, Dr. Jamal Rashid.
Wa alaykum as-salam, Brother Henry. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Shadu'in la ilaha illallah wa antahu la shirika la wa ashadu'in muhammadan abduhu wa rasuluh. Brothers and sisters in the American Muslim 360 radio listening audience, we greet you with the greetings of peace of assalamu alaikum. You know, we need to be aware that all of humanity is compelled each and every second of our daily lives. We are required, literally by nature, to make three compelling decisions. And as you stated, Brother Henry, the first and most important one is what we consider is morally correct. And number two is, and number three are really like twins. Two and three, economic expediency, that is survival mode, or what's required naturally, is economic expediency of food, clothing, and shelter. And the third is the one that is very compelling. And that is political expediency is the same, exact same thing as immediate self-gratification. What's going to make me happy? And so a lot of emotionalism is around political expediency. Many times we know that politicians adhere to what their constituents insist that they represent. That's why we know politicians, elected politicians, do what they do. Many times we don't understand it. We say, well, they just the way they are. I don't like the term that is manipulated of labeling one as being right to the right when the subliminal message, if one is considered to the right, technically and literally, the opposite is considered to the left. Or another word that can be substituted for left is right. It is no accident that the one that's labeled to the right is known to be the conservative narrative. Generally labeled Republican as being to the right. And Democrats are considered to the left. But again, subliminal, the tricky or the manipulative, persuasive word, because words make people, is to consider actually the Democrats as the wrong party. Do you know that many times they are considered to the left, or even right next to socialism, or too far from communism, or socialism. So words do impact how people feel and think and act, but we want to reemphasize or reiterate that the labels are very subjective and persuasive as far as how words influence how people feel, think, and act. The narratives that are suggested from these sound bites offer ideologies and philosophies, a way of thinking, etc. And if you notice, you might say that politicians, if not all of them, are loyalists or confined to carry out certain policies or adhere to certain narratives as far as their way of what they think and how they perform what they think. And so we see the interaction of how words definitely influence people's feelings, thinking, and behavior. It is to our advantage to recognize how words are designed to influence the various narratives or way of life. When you know that this country is divided, when it should be uniform as one nation, but the reality is that it is definitely divided. And we know how committed, regardless of morality, which is the first and foremost decision that should be the criteria, is not that. What becomes most focused upon the narratives of how people, and politicians in particular, think is to follow certain issues as their top preference. And so it gives you a better understanding. And notice what I was getting ready to say is that when politicians no longer seek the office that they represent, you find many of them rely or go right back to what they believe is morally correct. And it relinquishes them, or it releases them from being enslaved as a political advocate of what their compelling arguments are as public officials. So we do know that what they consider the bait is very, according to subjective polling, are very loyal to personal self-interest, or again, ignore morality as far as what's decent and what's righteous, which is the strength of the human being. So the narratives that really control the political arena is based strictly on what is in the best interest of politicians when it comes to political office holders. But when you understand that political expediency, to every human being, all of us are political in the sense that we do have immediate self-gratification spearheading our opinions, our feelings, our thinking, and followed up by behaviors of what we adhere to. And so we should understand, make a side note, that the only time that political and economic expediency is permitted is when it follows the criteria of what's morally correct. To make it simpler or plain more plain to understand the scenario, what we're describing, is that we know that as Muslims, we consider the Quran as our criteria. And so it is advisable, Quranic, that is first and foremost. So if it needed self-gratification fall within the guidelines of the Quran, then it's permissible. It is okay. But if it's contrary to the criteria of the Quran, then we have to reject economic expediency when, let's say, greed becomes the top priority, or arrogance, or emotion that centers around where, let's say, for example, the Second Amendment is constantly reinforced, and each and every time you have a mass shooting, there's no concerted effort to do the right thing, to subject the Second Amendment to follow what is considered morally correct. And you know, the NRA, the National Rifle Association, constantly has power, that is, material and economic power, that the enslaved politicians continue to adhere to as far as making it a mandate that the Second Amendment stays intact. And then you have to ask yourself, why is it that it was noted, or it is noted, as the Second Amendment? Why does it have such, why is it such a high priority in a minority's self-interest? Why are they so bent over to uphold the policies of the Second Amendment? Was it due to fear that they wanted to make sure that to bear arms, because that's what it centers around, the right to bear arms, that is, weapons, military weapons, in fact, becomes an endangered weapon that has been the weapon of mass murders. You know, I don't know what is the current statistic, but it's well over outrageous as far as the number of mass shootings where multiple people are murdered in public settings, in schools, that institutions of learning have been subjected now in public areas where a mass murder can take place at any moment. And so it gives us a better understanding when we are aware of how these three basic decisions that all human beings are basically subjected to, but when you have understanding of it, then you can understand why people feel, think, and act the way they do. And so that's our topic that, as you stated, Brother Henry, that was the subject from last week, and we want to expand upon it even further this week. So we see that, again, when you can understand personal self-interest, self-interest, or that what we call immediate self-gratification, then see why it has such a high preference as far as choices that people make. And we are, again, subjected to make these choices whether we are conscious of it or not. But that's why we are highlighting this particular issue, so that we can understand, even though we may not agree, but at least you have understanding. We have understanding of why things are the way they are, as far as what we may call insanity, nonsense, using common sense when it comes to public policy. That, again, lawmakers, what we call politicians, do or are subjected to or compelled to do from personal self-interest of being re-elected to their particular public office. But it goes all the way to our personal self-interest, individuals, as far as the politics of ourselves, that in self-interest, our what we call immediate self-gratification, and we reiterate this because we have to be consciously aware of why people make these decisions, and sometimes, if not all the time, is specifically driven from emotional self-interest of what makes me happy, the me, instead of the we. You know, a healthy culture is we-orientated, not I, not the I, but the we. And so you can see that it goes contrary to what is a healthy culture. And so you can see, if you understand our understanding of this subject, of why people feel, think, and act the way they do. So that's our topic for today. And encourage you, if you have a question or comment on this topic, to please press 1, and we can bring you into the queue and engage in a wholesome, positive, and most beneficial conversation. Time, Brother Henry, if you have a comment or a question, I turn it back over to you, sir.
Yes, you know, we stated last week how when the moral correctness of an issue or situation is not considered, that's when we go off of the path or the correct path that a human being should be in. And when we look at the society today, it seems as though that's not considered in a situation or in decision making. Where, you know, in the past, as we say, it was the number one thing. If it wasn't morally correct, then people didn't even go any further than that to even consider it. But nowadays, they look at what's economically expedient. How much money? Can I make some money off of it? And they don't look at the moral aspect. Is this a correct way? So now, when we look in the society, and I'm talking about the Western society, America in particular, then we see that intoxicant and gambling now is running wild, is running rapidly, you know. You can't hardly go into a store now that doesn't have intoxicants because they don't consider the moral correctness of the decision that's being made. And matter of fact, sometimes they will use the excuse that everybody else is doing it, but they don't consider whether it's morally right or wrong. Are we just giving the people what they want? So these things have caused a big problem in the society. And if we're going to work to try to correct the society, then we have to bring this moral aspect back into the decision-making. So when we're talking to our families and we're talking to our children, then we need to let them know because they're not even thinking. They don't even think now on the mark. And I'm talking about religious people and all. We don't think or give the type of consideration we should be giving to that moral correctness or that moral aspect of our decision-making. So I just wanted to add that comment to what we are discussing here today. And if you are ready, we'll go to a break here, and then we'll come back. And if our callers have got a question or comment and like to add to this conversation, then you press 1 on your phone, and we will get you on the other side of this break. We'll be right back.
Join us live every Wednesday morning from 7 a.m. to 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time with host Naima Latif and yours truly, Imam Kareem Hamid, presenting The Female Solution. We look forward to your presence. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Dabrita Hadi, Director of the MCNRD Model Community National Resource Directory, reminding volunteers of our upcoming MCNRD Social Connect Conference every last Sunday of the month, 1 o'clock p.m. to 2 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time. We look forward to your participation, so please check your email for conference call information. Thank you so kindly. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis, advisor at Graceline Community, asking you to join me in supporting community-wide Shura Conference and American Muslim 360. Make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or phone in your pledge to 910-317-0297. Again, make your tax-deductible contribution today at cwsc.us or by phone at 910-317-0297. Together, we can remake the world. Thank you.
All right, we are back with critical issues, these issues that affect our daily lives. And Dr. Rashid, I see we do have a caller. Are you ready to bring them in?
Yes, this is area code 706-627.
Assalamu alaikum. This is Edward Willis.
Mm-hmm. Go right ahead.
Yes, sir. Walaikum assalam. This is Imam Muhammad. Brother Muhammad from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad, by the way, of Columbus, Georgia. Just want to say, I think plain and clear, when we understand that Allah says humanity is not him, humanity is not the guidance of the Quran. Humanity is not following the footsteps of Prophet Muhammad side of Islam. And that's why there is no model community yet, or there is no al-Islam, or there is no peace, because we are thinking that if humanity can agree to do something that is better than what Allah has sent us, when Allah is the creator of humanity. So it's very clear, and we can continue to use all of our good, but it's not going to happen. And Allah says, why do you cling so heavily to what y'all talk about? what y'all think is right, what y'all think is wrong. He said, are you trying to please humanity or are you trying to please your creator? And there's so much wisdom in the simplicity of this wonderful opportunity that we have to establish peace here on earth. But we have to do it with our own free will, that it can only come from Allah, the Quran, and the footsteps of Prophet Muhammad Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam, and those who firmly stay within their human ability in those footsteps. And then I think we will see the type of progress that is almost equal to the ascension. Prophet Muhammad's footsteps made the ascension. We can come out of this situation we're in overnight and help humanity save its own soul by recognizing there's one God and that Muhammad and all the prophets and messengers before him are from the same creator. And then we'll see some real progress and we'll start saving our children from the fire, our grandchildren from the fire. And inshallah, we'll save even us, the pioneers. Remember, we are the pioneers in America of Al-Islam, the descendants of the slaves that came here. Because many of those slaves embraced Al-Islam once they got here. Some of them was from, they came here as English people. They came here as Chinese people. But after they heard the call, the Azan called amongst the believers, slave Muslims here, they joined in their own little way. And they start praying to the God that they've seen that the Muslim slaves were doing. They took their faith grew. And that's why we're free now. It's the faith of the believers is the reason why America knows that God is blessing it. But it also knows that the devil is slowly but surely, whether we believe it or not, making us deviate and turn back around and listen to his call of disunity, of poverty, of murder, homosexuality, et cetera, et cetera. And we are looking to each other to solve this problem. And only Allah can do that. Just want to say that. Thank you very much. Assalamu alaikum.
Before you leave, I have a question. How do you influence a nun, a person that don't understand Islam? Because you are preferencing Islam. How do you invite people who may have a misconception of what inviting personal family into the narrative? How do you satisfy the consciousness that you're speaking to humanity when you're speaking of Islam?
The best way to do it is to look at what humanity has compiled and put on paper. Humanity has agreed that the number one influence of the world in almost every facet of the life is this way of life and this false religion called Christianity. And right behind it is Al-Islam. And when they begin to look at the two things that are really causing the influence of the world, they'll see the purity, the guidance of the Quran. The guide is those who are responsible for living the Quran. And they will begin to see that Jesus Christ ain't Prophet Isa. Prophet Isa wasn't white. They'll see a whole lot of truth like that was promised to them in their contaminated revelation by the shaitan. It's very clear. But we had to point them to that fact by modeling the differences between all the religions. Allah said, this day I completed my favor upon you for all the ways of life that you have studied or heard or been influenced by. And it's called Al-Islam. And there's no white over, no black over white. You know the saying. It gives a complete, clear parable. And then if some of them who are blessed to be following their own natural inclination, they read the Quran, they'll find out no sooner than they come out of Al-Fatiha, they will see Allah show them that there's no doubt in this final revelation. And everything that they want to know about themselves, because they should read that Quran to learn about their own self first, because that's what Allah said to do with it. Don't go into the Quran looking for solutions to the world. Yes, sir.
But still, you will have those who still say you are overbearing Islam, forcing a religious perception on my way of thinking. Again, how do you make people comfortable who make misconceptions in their way of thinking when it comes to Islam?
Right. Well, the best thing, I guess, it would be to, as always, invite them to the Quran, ask them would they read it, and look into the Quran for what ails you, what bothers you, what gives you doubt about what I'm saying, what gives you doubt about what the Muslims are trying to tell you, what gives you doubt that what you read in the Bible, what they call the Bible nowadays, with the 300-some different versions of it, what's the difference? Then they'll read, as they go into Al-Baqarah, that the Creator will tell them, because remember, Allah created us, so they know when Allah is talking to them. They have to accept it or reject it, though. And Allah will guide them out of that state, and they will begin to learn what we learn. When you have doubt, leave it alone. Any doubt that you have, don't keep wasting years, 50 years, 10 years time to resolve a problem that Shaitan has given you about what Allah says. When Allah says, just put it aside and I'll give it to you later on, and just keep concentrating on what answers your problem that helps you save your soul from drugs, from alcohol, child abuse, spouse abuse, problem that we have. Allah said, come to me for the answer first when you can't solve it with your own intellect that I have given you because you have doubt. That doubt is a dangerous thing. What the world is going through right now is doubt that there is a God, that Jesus Christ is the Son of God, all kind of doubt. Anything that you could think of, it's in doubt. But if we don't make it clear, without a doubt, in our deeds and actions, in our schools, in our hospitals, in the way we wash up every morning, the way we use the restroom, and start educating them into themselves. The best thing we could do for anybody is to be their mirror. But we have to be a mirror of the Quran, the mirror of the life example of Prophet Muhammad. Yes, sir.
Yes.
And I think it will help all of
you. You're re-emphasizing, the language of Islam. We're trying to get a universal language that is going to be more acceptable to those who still may be controlled by misconceptions. So we thank you for your narration and your opinion. We're going to move on to...
Okay, can I say this though right quick?
Yes,
can I say this right quick? Then? You'd be surprised if we started having free Arabic, Quranic Arabic classes in the libraries, anywhere we get, and invite people to come and hear what the universal language of our creation says, and then let them on their own core by Allah's permission study and learn Arabia because it's available to them. And that way we ain't got forced nobody to do nothing. If they come and read, because only the believers, only the ones who are in doubt going to respond to that. They're going to come and try to learn what little Arabic so they can understand the language we're talking. They can give the best definition of why Arabic says this in English. They don't know the difference in French or whatever. They'll learn. But we have to make available to them al-Islam. We have to make the Quran available to them. We have to make the language of the Quran available to them and not do it like the way we've been doing it. It's free to put it in the library. A brother or sister or imam in every city can go and have a couple of hours every week teaching the Quranic Arabic in the library and put it in the local paper saying anyone who wants to understand the language of the Quran, the final revelation to humanity, come and study the language of it and you'll get a universal understanding of what we're talking about, why we are doing what we're doing, why we are so firm in our language.
Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. All right. Yes, we're going to go ahead and call 314-833.
State
your name and where
you're
calling from.
Assalamu alaikum to you, my dear brother. It's good to have you back, brother Henry Hasib and Dr. Jamal Rashid, Mark Shaheed here from the SDL. The Gateway City of St. Louis and the Show Me State of Missouri. I was just listening to Brother Muhammad, and he was asking the question, it's so very easy. No, you don't try to teach the people Arabic and all of that. No, you don't do that. You know, if you're a Muslim and you want to learn to read the Quran in Arabic and you take classes and all yourself, that's fine. Imam Muhammad, he taught the Quran very clearly. He knew that everybody, even Muslims in this association, they're not able to read the Quran in the language in which it was revealed. Imam Muhammad said something very profound, and I hope Brother Muhammad is listening. You know, first of all, we can't talk to people like we're preaching to them, like a Baptist preacher or a sanctified preacher. You don't talk to people like that. You have to respect their intellect. You have to respect their intelligence. You don't do that. Allah says in terms of with wisdom, beautiful preaching or teaching in that regard. So that's the first thing, you know. You don't talk to other people like they're children, you see. You talk to people in a respectful way. Now, we know that Christian brothers and sisters don't have the right conception. And actually, the Quran actually gives it to you. After Al-Fatiha, God says that is the book. This is the book. In it is guidance sure without doubt. Okay? So you don't have to say much in regards to that. I mean, how many people have ever read a book? Just think about this. How many people have ever read a book where it says that this is the book, and it is guidance, sure, without doubt? I haven't. I read a lot of books. I mean, I'm not able to read now, but I've never read a book that says this is the book, and it is guidance, sure. You see, the very nature of human beings, the urge to have guidance in their life and direction in their life is in the nature of human beings to want that. And so human beings naturally will be searching. You'll be looking, wanting to know. This is like with children. Children know that they don't know, but they're curious. They want to know. You see, the book itself will explain itself, you see, in that regard. And then God comes and says, this is the book, and it is guidance, sure, without doubt. But then it starts to give the criteria as to who is for those who are consciously regardful of me. So if a person is not consciously regardful, it's like go back to what Brother Henry was saying in terms of having a moral consciousness that people want to do right, and it's actually in the nature of human beings. The inclination is to want to live right, life in a righteous way. That's in our nature. You see, this is how you explain it. You don't have to. You notice I'm not raising my voice. I'm not preaching. I'm just saying things in a universal language that can appeal to anybody, anywhere in the world. People can agree with that, you see, who are conscious regardful of me. There are people who are conscious regardful of God and then believe in the unseen, okay? So when you say believe in the unseen, you can't see God. You can't see God with your physical eye. But what you can see is God's handiwork, and that's the natural creation. I mean, you know, as human beings, we got enough sense to know we didn't put that sun out there. We didn't put the moon out there. We don't have any control when it rains or when it doesn't rain. This is simple teaching, universal teaching. You know, it's just like you were teaching a child in that regard. You don't have to preach browbeat people in that regard. This way of life is so very, very simplistic. And then God says, who established regular prayer? People have been praying to God for a long time. Some people have had a misconception and perception as to who God is. But we can see those things that man cannot do, that this is a creator that caused all these things to come into existence. But it's in the nature of human beings of servitude. They want to serve God. God put that there. He put that there. See, and who is it that you should serve? Just like Prophet Ibrahim, the one, come to the conclusion, the one that has created all of this that we see and those things that we don't see. And then it goes on, the truth that was revealed to thee, the revelation that came to Muhammad and the revelation that came before. So the Quran didn't come before the Torah, the Old Testament, nor the intro of the New Testament. See, and then God goes on to say, those are the ones, you understand, that are on right guidance. They're on right guidance. And those are the ones, you understand, will get the reward. I was just teaching this last night on the Parenting and Family Reconstruction Learning Lab. And the topic was simply, you know, illustrating consequences in a vivid way, in a very distinct, clear way to our children when we're teaching our children. So, yeah, your approach would not be lower your voice. First, lower your voice, Brother Muhammad. Lower your voice. Don't talk to people like they don't have intelligence, they don't have an intellect. And then when you're talking to people of different religious persuasion, you start with, in terms, when you have interfaith dialogue, you start with a commonality. And commonality, words of inanality, is a reality. What do we have in common? That's how you begin to talk, you see. They believe God is one, but they have the wrong concept. You can't divide God up. You don't go at people and start talking against what they believe. You'll lose them, you see. I'm just saying because I've done this before. I've spoken to people that were not Muslim. They were non-Muslim, you see. But they was agreeing with me in the end because I don't talk down to people. You don't do that. I wasn't going to say anything. I just was going to listen. But the Spirit came over me to actually say this, and I hope he's still listening. Lower your voice. Talk to people like you want to be talked. Don't talk to them like they're children. And that's what I'm hearing. I mean, I love Brother Muhammad, but I have to say this. You come on like that, and that turns people off about this religion. It's a beautiful religion. But you give it in a simplistic way. In a universal language. That's what Imam Muhammad called a universal language. Just what I just said. That would make a person want to continue to read the Quran and study it to see what Al-Islam is all about. And even more so than that, be a good example of that. Don't say one thing and do another. I could say more, but I think I said enough. I'll stop there. Thank you, Dr. Jamal. And Brother Henry, for giving the opportunity to say that. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam. Thank you for your comment, because it is a definite struggle to come up with a commonality where people feel a sense of belonging. That's one of the emotional needs of belonging. And we to emphasize the human family, then we have to think logical and sexual to the point of coming. Suggesting that you are superior, or one way of life is superior, and people get the notion that you are basically rejecting their their way of
yeah.
logic or their way of thinking. You have to find yeah. commonality. So just
That's
use
right.
the words decency and righteousness.
Decency and righteousness.
That is
yeah.
the language that people can adhere to.
That's
when
right.
you look at the strength of the human being, it's based on decency and righteousness. Then they can, perhaps, if they don't agree with that, then sometimes you have to go to a different scenario of just a person that is illogical. But when you can come to the common language that should be agreeable to a common sense form of language, then hopefully you can get this to that stage of interface.
Yes.
We see where we have that commonality.
That's right. Yeah, very well said, Dr. Jamal. And that's the way that it has to be presented in that way. You decency, I mean, because that's in the nature. I mean, just what you just said, decency and righteousness is in the nature in all human beings. I don't care where they are. And that's what you appeal to. You appeal to that. And that's common in all human beings. I mean, the very feature, original nature, that's the commonality that we have. And that's the way we should talk to each other in that regard. You don't come and roar. Matter of fact, in terms of communication, I've done this for years. In terms of communication, 55% is body language. I've heard preachers preach, and how they roar. And we shouldn't come off like that. We're roaring at people. We're talking down to people. I'm better than you. And you need to accept this and blah, 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 and all that. And then the tone of voice. The tone of voice, the prophet was never loud. Go and study it. Man Muhammad said, study Prophet Muhammad. He wasn't the type of a prophet and messenger that roared at people. No, he didn't. He was very respectful when he spoke to people, and he didn't use loud voices and at people. But he was God's messenger. But he didn't talk like that, and so that's why I'm saying, you can mean well, you can have good intention, but you can have the wrong approach. And I'm just saying that hopefully that helps Brother Muhammad and those persons. You understand that the Muslims represent Islam. Learn, you understand, the ethics, also the adab, as the Prophet Muhammad lived the Quran. And it doesn't mean that we go and we look down on people. Find the commonality. The commonality, the reality, what all human beings have in common, and the desire to want to get to know God so they can serve God properly. That's in the fitra. I mean, children even exemplify that. They know they don't know, but they're curious. They want to know, you see, and you appeal to, would you talk to your children like that? They ask you a question? No. So we need to stop that. We need to stop that. And therefore, we can have better human relationships. And then from there, we begin to start to working together for the common good of all people. Like you said, the righteous and decency. Imam Muhammad said the ultimate goal is to establish an ethical and a just society for all people to live in. Everybody's not going to become a Muslim. That's another thing. I remember in Milwaukee in 1978, and a sister stood up to challenge the imam, and she was trying to accuse the imam of making everybody Muslim. Imam Muhammad responded to her in a very calm way. He didn't roar. He didn't shout at her. He says, no, sister. He said, that's not my goal. He said, my goal, if you're a Christian, that hopefully if you're listening to what I'm saying, you'll become a better Christian. See? Because Allah is the one that gives us free will. Free will, the free will to choose what way of life that we want to live. But we want to live it with understanding, with a clear perception of that. See, so that's not the goal, to try to make everybody Muslim. So Allah has a say-so in that, but it also, you have a say-so in terms of the heart that you have. And when you read the Quran, just like we do there on the Parenting Family Reconstruction Learning Lab, there's consequences, good consequences, for people who have good intention, pure intentions, motivation to want to have guidance in their life. And then God comes right behind that and says, for those who, it doesn't matter, those who, if you warn them or you warn them not, they still will be the same. So God says what the consequences are for those. You understand? They'll have a seal on their heart, meaning they won't have those sensitivities. They have a seal on their ears. They won't even be able to hear, nor to understand God's word. And they'll have blindness on their eyes. They won't have clear perception. You see, they will actually be deceived, thinking they're deceiving God and the righteous. They'll be deceiving themselves. And, you know, and so, and then finally, the last of that in terms of disease in their heart. They won't feel easy, and God increases that, because when you reject God's message and sign, then there's another thing, a consequence in that regard. So we have to look and read the Quran. Allah makes it easy for us to understand it, because He gave us the intellect, He gave us the intelligence to be able to do that. So we don't have to preach to people like a Baptist preacher, sanctified preacher, in terms of trying to get the message over. Some are going to accept, yes, and some are not going to accept, but appeal to what God has given. The decency, the righteousness, the inclination that's in our nature, in our intelligence, appeal to that. Brother Muhammad, please do that, and you'll see you're going to get better results. People are going to appreciate you and what you're trying to say. But the Quran explains itself. We don't have to do much. Who can do it better than the one who has created everything, creation, and given
you know
us
what?
Revelation?
You know what? I like to reference people to do. You have to mention Prophet Muhammad. Refer to his last
sermon
that he spoke against in superiority.
That's right.
Emphasize that. That can be a commonality. Once
that's
again,
right.
Into oneness.
That's right. That's his farewell there on Mount Arafat. That's the last time he addressed the Ummah. He addressed that. And, you know, no superiority over white. With black, actually said red, but they said it's black in terms of color, and then in terms of an Arab over a non-Arab, you see, and even distinguishing in terms of even the respect, you know, for women, and all that's an excellent place to start in terms of showing the commonality, the unity of humanity. It's basically what it was. Those things that they had problems with at that time, and still you see these things are problematic today for people. Yeah, you can have a copy of that, and people can just read. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
Be very strategic and strategize on how to bring commonality. Because the objective of the external, what I consider the external objective of the Satan, is to divide.
That's right.
Be aware of the logic or the strategy that is used to create division.
That's right.
So to offset that, it's to speak on what we know to be factual as far as the last sermon that spoke out against the various forms of how the manipulations of the external, what I call the external Satan, is to get people to adhere to judgmental language that is intended to divide and conquer.
That's right. That's right. That's right. Yeah, and the way we and from our position is to unite humanity and let people know we're all one people. And actually, the Quran tells us why Allah made different nations and different tribes, so we may get to know each other to have a greater expanse in terms of respect for each other and different cultures and all of that. The Quran is so beautiful when you understand it and you talk in a decent way, in an intelligent way, with wisdom, or it makes people want to know more and more and more about your religion. And we don't have to preach.
Right. So thank you for your comment, but we have to get ready for Imam Adam Biyad.
All right. As-salamu alaykum.
It's been very well taken. Thank you so much. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum as-salam.
Okay, Brother Henry, you have the topic for Imam Adam Biyad.
Voice you will hear will be our brother Adam Biyah. As-salamu alaykum.
Okay, and this topic will be about
the peace be on you. As-salamu alaykum. My name is Omar Shakir, and I'm resident imam of Masjid Bilal Ibn Rabah in San Antonio, Texas. And I would like to invite you every first Sunday from 12 to 1:30 p.m. Eastern Time to join us for our class where we're dealing with the subject matter of the basics in El-Islam. We are excited about this program, even if we're new Muslims or Muslims have been in the faith for many, many years. It is a wonderful opportunity to learn and understand this beautiful way of life. We also connected with various insights from the tafsir of Imam Waliduddin Muhammad radiallahu anhu, and we all explain its practical application. We look forward to being with you on every first Sunday of the month where we would deal with the basics of Islam. The peace be on you. As-salamu alaykum.
As-salamu alaykum. Welcome to Rabbi Barakatu. This is Adam Biyah here on Money Sense on MP60 on this Thursday morning, August the 17th. I want to welcome everybody to our program today, those that are remaining on the call from our previous program with Dr. Jamal Rashid and Imam Henry Hasib. Excellent, excellent program, as always. I'm going to open up today's program reading from the Quran, Surah Al-Qisas, Surah Al-Qisas, that's the 28th surah. We're going to read the 15th ayah. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Badakala madinatan ta alahine gailatim min akliha fawajada biha wajulaini yakatatilani hadha min shi'atihi wa hadha min aduwi fastadat فَهُ الَّذِي مِنْ شِيَاتِهِ عَلَى الَّذِي مِنْ عَدُوِهِ عَلَى الَّذِي مِنْ عَدُوِهِ فَوَكَزَهُ مُوسَى فَكَدَى عَلَيْهِ قال هذا من عمل الشيطان إنه عدو مضل مبين صدق الله العظيم. In the translation, blessed refuge from Malashim, Shaitan, the accursed with the last name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. And he entered the city at a time when his people were not watching. And he found there two men fighting, one of his own people and the other of his foes. Now the man of his own people appealed to him against his foe. And Musa struck him with his fist and made an end of him. He said, "This is a work of evil, Shaitan, who is an enemy that manifestly misleads. Sadaq Allah al-Azim, Allah speaks the truth, and surely Allah's words are true." I know that for the last week, or probably 10 days, the eyes of the social media have been inundated with images from Memphis, not Memphis, from Montgomery, Alabama. And when I say Montgomery, Alabama, I know everybody on social media know what I'm talking about. The incident in Montgomery, I know they, you know, the media said it was a brawl. But I don't want to refer to it as a brawl. I saw it as black people coming to the defense of a brother. And for those of you that don't, are not conscious or don't know about what happened, I encourage you to do your own research and see what happened. So I've been kind of checking things out and saw different images, different video clips of what happened in Montgomery. And I know when I first saw the first event, I could feel in my spirit that I should have been there, or more of us should have been there to defend the brother, who was clearly unjustly attacked. Clearly. And we have all kind of images of the brother throwing his black hat in the air. I'm not sure where that move came from, but I knew it was like a call for help. And we see the images of him being attacked, and there's a young brother, 16 years old, who was on the riverboat. You know, the riverboat was trying to dock on and had a specific place that it docks, but the riverboat couldn't dock because there was I forget what kind of boat they described it as, but there was a privately owned boat that was blocking his docking berth, and so it couldn't. And so the riverboat had to wait a half an hour, 45 minutes for those people to move their boat out the way so it could dock. So the brother who we found out was the first mate, he was like the co-captain of that riverboat, and he got off the boat dropped him on the side where they could reach, and he tried to find the people on the boat so they can, I think he called it a pontoon, so they can move it out the way so they can dock. And that's where they all began. When he first got there was nobody there to identify with it, that he needed to call the captain to move. So the first mate began to move it himself. And as soon as he was trying to move, then up comes some of the owners of the boat who were Caucasian. And then a discussion ensued. And saw the brother trying to explain to them, if you just move your boat up a little bit, I mean, this was his actions. You couldn't hear the video from what was being said, but I can kind of sense that he was trying to get them just move the boat. And it wasn't that much it had to move. Move the boat out the way so we can dock the river boat and the passengers can embark, get off of the boat and go their way. And from that discussion, one of the Caucasians attacked the brother. And that's when he threw his black hat up in the air and said, okay, the brother's ready. So that happened. And then some other Caucasians came to jump on your brother. And then before you knew it, there were African Americans who were on the dock that saw this happening, and they came to the brother's defense. A young brother, 16 years old, who was on the riverboat, jumped in the water and swam from the riverboat to the dock. And he was the one there to protect the captain or whatever his title was, the brother's title was. He was co-captain or the second in command. And from that, it became a melee. People just fighting and things of that nature. So when I saw the incident, my spirit was, I need to be there helping that brother. And I'm sure that was a spirit that people had, because people came from all over. I mean, African Americans came from all over to fight to help the brother. And long story short, there was, the police finally came and broke it up, and they started detaining people and going from there. So I'm going to play a clip I have here from Brother Malcolm. And it's a clip that he was being interviewed in 1963. He was on the campus of Berkeley University. And he was being interviewed by a professor there. And there was a professor there, and there was one of the professor's students, and they were interviewing Malcolm. So I'm going to play this. I'm like a minute and 10-second clip. But I'm going to play this clip, and I think you recognize when I play the clip that it was important, and it speaks to this moment.
Should other black men help that particular person who was attacked?
I think you'll find, sir, that there will come a time when black people wake up and become intellectually independent enough to think for themselves. As other humans are intellectually independent enough to think for themselves, then the black man will think like a black man, and he will feel for other black people. And this new thinking and feeling will cause black people to stick together. And then at that point, you'll have a situation where when you attack one black man, you are attacking all black men. And this type of black thinking will cause all black people to stick together. And this type of thinking also will bring an end to the brutality inflicted upon black people by white people. And it is the only thing that will bring an end to it. No federal court, state court, or city court will bring an end to it. It's something that the black man has to bring an end to himself.
All right. So I guess you can see from when I saw that clip last week, and I said, I wonder if this is the time that Malcolm was speaking of. I mean, so much has happened in society when we did not step up to the challenge to defend. I remember the brother, and you probably remember the brother that was on the subway in New York, right? And sure, he had mental challenges, probably so. And he wasn't really bothering the writers. They were used to that. They weren't complaining. But one, it got to the point where a group of passengers were trying to stop the brother from, and I think he was singing or performing. And they tackled the brother, and this one guy put him in a chokehold. And they had that situation where he was in a chokehold, that end up dying right there in the subway, visible to people. And no one lended a hand to save that brother. We have that image in our mind. And then we fast forward to the image of last week. Totally different response. For whatever reason, you can give your, you can feel free to give your comments as to what the reason was. When Malcolm was talking about that black people would become so mentally, intellectually dependent and free that they would respond like that. So I just saw that, but that was speaking to this moment. But it happened, and it's something that doesn't usually happen, but it did happen. And I don't know if it's a time to, things are going to change. I know that all of social media, now, you know, maybe I'm in the social media world, my perspective is skewed because social media is like, it's not normal in that regard, you know. And another thing about social media, with the analytics, the app sends you what you are used to. And I see your brothers keep raising his hand and slowing his hand. That's fine, brother. It's just I'll be there in a minute. But I want to get this first part out of the way before we get interrupted. I'm trying to set the stage. So just be patient. You might have to wait for a minute. Be patient. So anyway, because I'm sure on social media that if you have right-wing tendencies, if your appetite calls for right-wing food, I'm sure that the social media posts that you're seeing totally not like the one I'm seeing. So I understand that. And I don't know how to get on the other end of it, but I'm sure if I wanted to take 5 or 10 minutes and look at the types of posts and threads that someone who's, I'm not going to call them conservative, that would dignify the position. But someone that's right-wing would be getting a totally different thread. So it's a different world out there for them than it is for me. So I know that's out there. But I also understand that the things I get down my threads, you know, whether it's on Instagram or Facebook or Twitter, are things that interest me. And I'm not interested in seeing how people can justify attacking African Americans or justify their position. I'm not interested in that, so I don't get much of that. It's just like you called in on Money Sense and listened to this program. And maybe one with critical issues with the previous program or A New Day for Al-Islam in America, which is the following program. And this is the program that you're interested in. You're not going to hear anything other than what we're bringing on this one. Now, if you want to listen to something else, I'm sure there's another station, internet-based station, that and I can't think of the name of it, but, you know, Alex Jones before he got busted down, or those types, I'm sure you can call in on those shows and listening. So it's no different from that. But I'd be interested in knowing what you think about what transpired, and we can talk about it for the next maybe 40 minutes or whatever, because that's how much time we got left. And would like to divide that 40 minutes up to some of you. So if you want to comment and wait in, just press 1 to get in the queue. If you don't have anything to say, then listen in, and maybe you can ask questions with your heart. So, and maybe you asking questions with your heart, someone will pick up the inspiration and answer your question. I don't know. But if you want to get direct, just press 1 to get in the queue and ask the question. So we're going to it's a good stopping point. We're going to take care of some promotional items. And so we'll play this quick PSA And I was told to quit saying quick PSA, but we're going to play this quick PSA, and then we'll be right back after this message, and we continue on. I see I got a couple of hands raised already, and we will be right back to take those questions or comments that you have, inshallah.
Assalamu alaikum. This is your brother, Kareem Hali, inviting you to join in the study group of the lecture of Imam Warisuddin Muhammad Rahimahullah Alayhi, broadcast Saturday morning at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. The first hour, we shall play a lecture or address from Imam Warisuddin Muhammad Rahimahullah Alayhi, and in the second hour, we shall open up the telephone line and share with each other the various beneficial points of interest contained in the lecture or address. So join the study group of the lectures of Imam Warisuddin Muhammad Rahimahullah Alayhi on the evolution of revolutionary thought and created purpose every Saturday at 6 a.m. Central Standard Time on American Muslim 360. Let's share. Thank you.
All right, we're back. This is Adam B.R. here on Money Sense on AM360, and we've just been talking a little bit about the Montgomery, Alabama incident that happened last week, and so we're going to go to the phone lines right now. First caller, area code 706-627, 706-627.
Wa alaikum assalam, Brother Muhammad, from the Ummah of Prophet Muhammad, by the way, of Columbus, Georgia. And I think the very important thing not to miss, how I think the third or fourth blow in that incident was by white women. We should be mindful of that, how still socially at home this type of attitude is still being developed. Then we also want to remember that Imam Muhammad said, whatever go on, don't become a racist and teach it at home or directly or indirectly, because we'll respond the same way. But respond because it pleases Allah that you will not let any human being suffer injustice, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, as we make our response, and do it without in a state of anger. Do it with control, logic, and rationale that it's only wrong to see. Not only that brother on that level, but any human being have 5, 6, 7, 8 people jump on them like that, which we are very familiar with in sometimes in our own community, where 5, 6, 7, 8 blacks jump on one black, using that terminology. We should not let that happen, you know. So that's one of the lessons we also don't want to miss. The third or fourth blow of that whole incident was by two white women, I think, ran up there and kicked that brother while he was down, you know. And this is in their heart. This is that in their house. This is when they eat dinner, drinking, partying together, whatever they're doing. And that's what is very, very important thing we should pay attention to also. Thank you, brother. That's it.
Thank you very much for working us out, man. Yeah. All right. Let's go back to the phone lines. Here we go, 914-434.
Assalamu alaikum. Wa alaikum assalam. I'm Adam. It's Muhammad Sharif.
Yes, sir. Yes.
Well, when I was viewing on my cell phone, it was very unclear as what was happening there. You can see who was getting who. I was on my phone. Maybe others were clear. So I guess
I would say look at it on the computer where you got a bigger screen, Mama. That way you won't have to squint.
Mm-hmm. All right. So my question is, how many people were injured, serious whether those injuries, and how many, were they sent to the hospital?
I think from what I read, there might have been a couple of people taken to the hospital, but I don't think they were admitted. So, I mean, there was a lot of blessings in that. Thank Allah, no one had a gun.
That's one of the points. That's one of the points I'm trying to get to. It's a situation like that. Many people, I mean, in that whole crowd there, I would think some people knew martial arts. I believe some people in that crowd carry weapons like a knife, a razor, or something. I mean, somebody probably just think about a gun. No one had a gun. No one came up with the gun. It's very questionable about that whole situation. Now, there are some of us thinking, could I finish? You know, Alan?
Go ahead.
It was staged. The whole situation. It was staged.
All right.
Can I say something else? They have a money making effort.
I'm asking a question as you go through it.
Go ahead.
I can't. By staged by who?
Staged by the the schemers, the money makers, and all of that. There was a big effort already. Immediately after it happened, they spoke about this woman wearing a cross around, and I won't speak on that question, not questioning that one. But anyway, there's a quick, almost instant, making T-shirts.
But Muhammad, that happens all the time. Let me share this with you, Muhammad.
Go ahead.
We the only people on the planet that don't benefit from our initiations, from things we start. Every time there's an incident, somebody is going to market it and benefit from it. The only people that don't is us. All right? Let me tell you. There was a local Dollar General store that had a cell phone stand. They got the little cell phone stands, right? And they had some of the cell phone stands that were folding chairs. So someone sent me a picture of that. I went to a few Dollar Generals to see if I can get some, and they were sold out. You understand? So I went online and I found a company that sold miniature folding chair, white folding chairs, miniature. And they had 30 left in stock. I bought the 30 of them. I'm not gonna tell you where I bought them from. You might want to buy one from me, and I'm doubling the price. No, but they were very reasonable. I bought them. Why did I buy them? Because I'm gonna give a white folding chair to these local African-American leaders I know that need some courage and hope that it might inspire them. I'm going to give them a white folding chair. You understand? But I'm sure there are people that are making miniature folding chairs or a black hat. Harriet 2 on it. And they're going to sell it. I know one that's getting ready to do it. Now, you're not going to tell you who he is. So there's always a commercial thing available, and people are going to make money on it. Now, is that Illuminati or is that capitalism? Which one is it? I'm not going to make it Illuminati. No, I'm not going to make it Illuminati. I'm going to make it purely capitalism. Because the Illuminati is not going to be on the corner selling hats or chairs, right? But people in society, everything we do, I guarantee you there's some Asians over there right now that's going to bring something to sell because we don't know how to control what we're doing. Economically, we're not economically liberated yet, the way Malcolm was talking about. Intellectually liberated. I want to see us get economically liberated. So go ahead on. I'll give you a couple, another minute, Muhammad. I got some people behind me. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, like I say, we believe it was phased. How soon did the police come in? As soon as that thing started developing, the police would have been alerted right away around that dock area. How long was it before the police came in?
All right, let me ask you a question, Muhammad.
Mm-hmm.
Under normal circumstances, how many police are at the dock anyway?
Oh, they're around there, and they could be there later. They could be later. They could be later in 10 seconds. There's a dangerous situation going on right on that dock. They got police that's right around the area, and they can alert the police to come there. So where did they show up?
So they had to be there anyway. So you can't say it was staged and they were stationed there. Because that is a public place. Tourists come there all day, every day at that dock. Public. There were 200 people on that boat. So it ain't like the people weren't there already. They might not have been in that sequence. But, okay, but I understand you're saying it was staged.
Yes.
They hired some actors to play those roles. Okay.
I'm not the only one saying that.
Well, I know you're not. I know you're the first one I ever heard say that, but I know you're not the only one. I know, especially with. Well, all right. Let's see what somebody else says there. Okay, thank you, Muhammad.
Okay, you are.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
All
right, let's go to the next to the phone line. There we go. 972-467. 972-467.
Assalamu alaikum. Alaikum assalam. Ishmael family.
Oh, brother Ishmael, yeah. I got you here, brother. You need a miniature white chair?
Not yet, brother. I know you got something, so I'll be on the lookout.
All right, go ahead.
When I saw the incident, I like to see them come to the aid of the brother. But one of the things that came in my mind is that. I'm not saying it's staged, but what I saw were pawns in a scheme we already have. The Europeans, whether they were drunk or not, they were pawns, and the response were pawns because it was all unsophisticated. And that's a low level response to a higher level response that we should be getting to. So I'm hoping this low level response. Gets us to think about higher level responses because the people that are scheming on us, they're not going to come jump us, five on one. These are the actors in this game that are doing this. And so I hope it leads to a bigger response. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Thank you very much. All right, let's go back to phone lines. Error code 251-404.
Assalamu alaikum, Brother Adam. This is Henry Hunt in Mobile, Alabama. I'm in the state where this happened. Matter of fact, it happened in the capital city of Alabama, which is Montgomery. It is a real incident. It is a real incident. Now, we don't know the minds, and all the conspiracies that come behind it. But my problem is this, and I guess it's not a problem, but this is what I observed. The news here reported it as a brawl. It's a brawl there. And when I think of a brawl, I think in people on this side and people on this side coming to maybe fight each other in this situation. But here's a situation where a person doing his job was jumped on regardless of the color. I think when they start putting color and all that in there, it really messes things up, because they still have a lot of racism here in Alabama. But being that it was Caucasian that jumped on an African American, and African American came to the rescue of this a person who's employed by the people there to direct the traffic and all. Any other situation, they would have reported them as a hero. But in this case of helping, because we see it all the time, I mean, everywhere, a hero, and the person saying, oh, no, I just helped, I'm not a hero, I just helped. But in the case of a person helping another person, because of the, I believe, especially here in Alabama, because of the color of their skin, they say it was a brawl. And I can see how these conspiracy theories would have meat for what they think that happened. But it's a situation that the news media always give a bad spin to it when it comes to African Americans. Now, just to think now, if you reverse this, if this was a Caucasian being jumped on by African American men, and other Caucasians had a cane, they would have made it out as though these was heroes that was saving this. And that's what I don't like about it. I believe you should give the truth no matter what. But they come up with, and I guess that's the way they see it when they look at these situations. If African Americans is involved in any way, they're gonna give a negative spin. And if Caucasians involved, even though if they gotta say it's bad, they're gonna get the most positive spin that they can give. And I think that's wrong, because you're swaying the public in the wrong direction rather than giving them the truth of the matter. As you see, the mayor in Montgomery had to come out and ask for an investigation, and that should have been normal. And like I say, I've seen other little smaller incidents where a person, regardless of their color, help another person that's in trouble, and they looked at as a hero. But in this case, if you help a person in trouble and you're African American, you may go to jail yourself.
Well, like all right. Thank you, brother. Christian.
All right.
The young brother that swam from the riverboat to the dock. 16-year-old brother. And the reason we haven't seen him in the media, because his parents forbade him from getting in that circus, right? But even with that, he's my hero. And he did it because he said they attacked one of our shipmates. And it was that kind of solidarity. Even when the riverboat captain sent his second in command to try to get the boat moved, they sent another shipmate who was a young Caucasian boy. And when it first happened, the young Caucasian boy tried to intervene and protect him. Protect him. But that's the culture of the ship, the crew of the ship, that kind of culture. So from that point of view, it wasn't racial. But guess what? You know, when I opened up, I read the story of Musa. And some of you know it from the Quran, where Musa came to the defense of one of his brothers, not blood brother, but someone in his group. And he ended up killing another guy. And then the next day, the brother in Musa's group did the same thing. And Musa came to his defense again. So in that point of time, the response was because he's one of my people. He's one of my people. But he still came to defense because that's normal. That's natural to come to defense of somebody, one of your people. We don't have to, you know, the problem with us, we got to qualify. Well, we come to the universal, all people, whatever. But that's not what the situation is. It's normal to come to the defense of one of your own people. But you also should understand that Musa came to the point, oh, I see who's the troublemaker, you. But he still was there to defend him. Right? And he was about to do the same to the foe the second time, until the foe brought to his attention, you did this yesterday. You don't do it again today. And that was enough word to cause Musa to step back, because that's when the moral issue was there. All right, let's go to the phone lines right now. We got another caller, area code 724-866. 724-866. That's what I'm looking.
Wa alaikum assalam. This is Sister Gail from Sharon, Pennsylvania. Now, as I never went to watch the incident, but and maybe I hope I understand what happened, if this is common practices, but you think if the person in charge of the riverboat, if he would have called the police or the security that they have there and have them try to find out, try to have them move the boat, maybe the whole incident wouldn't occur? Or is this how they handle it all the time? Probably not the first time that someone parked their private platoon in the area where this boat docks. And I think
in this regard, calling the police would have been overkill, because all the first mate was doing was trying to get the people who owned the boat to move it maybe a couple of feet out. And there is
But I'm saying, is that normal procedure that you do that, like you're parking, if someone's parked in, I know I had an incident one time, and this has been a while ago. And I was going in a mall in the parking lot, and, you know, traffic goes two ways. So I was getting ready to pull into the parking space, and the person that was coming in the opposite direction, somebody in the passenger side jumped out of the car and stood in the parking space blocking me from pulling in. And I'm saying to myself, I can't believe this person is doing this. And I just kind of like kept slowly going in. And I said, well, could you please move? Because it made no sense. I was clearly there first. And I said to him, I said, could you please move? And he would not move. And I said to myself, I said, you know, today it didn't make any sense for him to jump out. If the person in the car driving was trying to go into the space with me, with his car, to me that would make more sense. But the passenger's going to get out and put his physical body in the parking space so I couldn't pull it. And I said, well, today, if he don't move, I'm going to hit him. And then I came to my senses and I said, now you're going to get yourself in trouble over hitting this guy. It's not worth it for a parking space. So I pulled up slow and slow. And he finally came to his senses and moved out the way so I could pull in. But at the same time, I was praying that Allah would have him come to his senses, because I felt like I wanted to bump him that day. Because, you know, it was ridiculous. So I'm saying, this is a common occurrence.
But like I said, somebody had to come to their good senses that day. Either way.
It could have insulated into a whole lot of things because it wasn't worth it for, because it's not like there weren't other parking spaces. It was just that incident there. And it did happen to be, I was black, and they were Caucasian. The audacity to do that, it made no sense for him to get out and stand in there and to think that I wasn't going to pull in that space. And I'm just saying procedurally at the dock there that maybe this incident, you know, if this is where the boat docks all the time, and this is like the business of that area, you would think that there would be some kind of caution, some kind of no parking because this is where the riverboat docks.
Well, there's a big sign.
Oh, there is.
One thing I saw, big sign. It says, it's reserved for the riverboat. You just had the Caucasian that day, they didn't give a hoot. When you say that the riverboat had to wait half an hour, 45 minutes for them to move.
But you think that they would have called, if they have security and police are there at the dock, that they should have called the people in authority to make them move and not even have to have get off the boat.
But you don't know what kind of fool you're dealing with.
That's true.
It probably wasn't a problem before, but that day it was a problem. But
Appreciate the fact that someone came to the person's aid, but we just have to be careful. People are always trying to make it a black and white issue, and it is a human issue, because why would you even do that to a person and knowing you're wrong? But see, that's what happens when you know you're wrong. I don't know. Stuff is happening so much. It oversensitizes you to black and white issue anymore, and it's hard not.
The whole environment is there in black and white issues. I mean, the reality is it's people's perception of race, and to say it wasn't a racial issue, the only way you can prove that is have the same issue take place when people are the same race and see how they respond. That's the only way you can prove that.
Right.
But in today's reality, it becomes racial when you look at it. And that's just how we have to look at it, I would think. All right, Sister, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for tuning in, as always. All right.
You're welcome.
All right, let's see here. I see some hands still up, but these are people that spoke earlier. Let's see. All right, Brother Henry, you want to make another comment, brother? Assalamu alaikum, 251-404. Okay, he's not there. All right, let's go to area code 219-484.
Assalamu alaikum. Well, alaikum assalam, Imam Adam. At the incident, I agree with Brother Henry in stating the fact that the media manipulated with, we have to understand how the media operates. You know, you have directors, producers, then you have the people that come in front of the audience that are pretty much reading a script. And you stated earlier it was described as a broil, but it actually was a defense. I looked at how the media manipulated this into a race situation by the language that was reported by the anchor
or the reporters on site. But behind the scene are the producers and the directors that are a minority, but they can manipulate with the choices, persuasive words, to describe what it was not. It was really a defense where I even looked at a multicultural, because they even tried to make it look like it was a majority of African Americans, but I saw a multicultural defense that fought off this attack by these Caucasians.
Doc, in the end, it was a majority African Americans.
Yeah, but I'm saying, but whether it was in the end or the beginning or the middle, the point was is that there was still a multicultural defense that took place, but that was not emphasized. And
well,
what
there,
was,
there
what
was in
emphasized
the beginning, there was. In the beginning, there
but
was
the
one
point is
Caucasian.
That they still tried to emphasize what they wanted the public to know. And that was the end. They neglected to give the whole picture. And that's the point that I'm just trying to make.
Yeah, I didn't find it. I looked at, in the preparation of this program, I looked at several reports, and I did take offense to using the word brawl. That's why I didn't use it. I said the incident in Montgomery. I didn't use the word brawl. All right.
That was misleading. But I'm still saying that we have to recognize how the media manipulates words to misinterpret what actually is a reality. And so we have to become more studious in understanding the psychology that's used behind news reporting. That can be very biased and racially orientated on purpose.
That it can, because that's why we need our own independent media. You understand?
Exactly.
Because we know the Caucasians are going to see it one way, and we might see it a different way. And
right.
When you're talking about reporting, you're giving it from your point of view. And your point of view might not be the same as my point of view. So that's why we need independent people to give it in the point of view. And when we can develop that, we can have that. That's all. But I'm not saying that you're suggesting it, but I'll stay away from the big conspiracy. Everything is a conspiracy. And I think as Muslim, when you say man plans and Allah plans, Allah is the best of planners, that kills any conspiracy.
Right.
It should kill the effect of any conspiracy.
Right. Well,
let's go as far
as in our thoughts, thinking, and recognize how the media is set up. And that what we see is the final script. What we see is the final script, but what behind the scenes is the mindset of a minority, and they could be very prejudiced or racist in their thoughts to what they want the public to know.
Well, actually, if you look at this thing was out of the media for the media didn't even cover it as much. And I think I have other analysis as to why that was. You had to search in deep in it to get coverage of it, because they don't want to create a situation where African Americans start banding together. I think the words of Malcolm said was true. So they steered away from it. But now, do I think it's media worthy? I do. I mean, as much as the other stuff they put on the media, this is just as much media worthy as that is. You understand? So choice of words might be, but that's always the case. Ain't no different. They always using the wrong choice of words in terms of, from our point of view.
But
I want to move away from the
conspiracy. That shows how effective words make people. That
but they control it. But our words can make people too. So they ain't got no lock on words making people. And if we know the oppressive words make people,
saying that they have a lock on it.
I know
you're
not saying. I'm not saying you. I know. I'm saying you're a dog. I'm not saying you. But that just shows you why we had to put the word out there, because the words of the Quran make people too. And
exactly.
We can't expect them to come from the word of the Quran making people. That's our job.
Exactly.
If we get on our job, we can make people.
Yeah,
we
have more
power
than we may think we have. We
exactly.
have more power than we think we may have.
Exactly. All right, Doc, appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much for tuning in again.
All right.
One brother, Muhammad's been raising his hand madly, so I'm going to get him in before we get like a minute for Muhammad. Thank you very much, Doc. Appreciate it.
All right. Assalamu alaikum.
All right, let's go to phone line. Muhammad, you got something burning on yourself? You want to get out?
Yes. Thank you. When you open up,
yes, sir.
This incident, you said about the riverboat sitting there waiting for 30 to 45 minutes. And a few minutes ago, you said
right.
the same thing. The riverboat sitting there waiting for 30 to 45 minutes. You mean they didn't have enough,
Andrew.
Whatever. To contact someone in authority to come and handle that situation. People had to go to work or business. They had connections to make. Sit there for 30, 45 minutes and nothing happened. No one called authority to move it.
I didn't say all that.
It just doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that no one with authority was called to handle that situation. But 30 minutes,
well,
that's a long time. That's why we say it.
I didn't say that.
Yes, you said 30 to 45 minutes before the riverboat called.
But I didn't say that they didn't call somebody.
Well, why authority and police or whatever didn't respond?
I wasn't there. I couldn't answer them.
I know.
I wasn't there.
You think.
All right, so I'm just reporting what they said. Now, why they didn't call anybody, I can't speak on that. And
maybe
they didn't call,
but the story didn't show up. But 30, that's a long time for a riverboat to sit there waiting.
I ain't trying to prove a point. You are.
Yes, I am.
I'm not trying to. So I'm not debating on you. If you believe it was staged, it was staged.
No, I am trying to make a point. There were 30 minutes for a riverboat to sit there and nothing was done. No. We don't accept that.
I mean, that's not a problem with me, but if you're saying it was staged, then maybe it was staged. But I'm not here to prove whether it was staged or not. I'm just reporting that.
30 minutes to sit there and 30 minutes for a riverboat to sit there and no one in authority came to make those other people move that boat? No way.
Okay. All right, brother.
That's a long
time.
You're welcome.
It is. All right, so it's end of my. I tell you what, it's staged. I'm getting out of here. I'm staging that right now. So, thank you all for tuning in, and hopefully you'll come back again next week, inshallah, and we'll discuss whatever the topic of the day is. Okay, alhamdulillah. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. The next voice you're going to hear is Imam Yusuf Ramadan, and his topic is Allah is not. Amen. Assalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh.
There's a place where words make people, a place where you're invited to expand your heart and mind. There's a place where your intellect is respected and your voice protected. You're listening to the American Muslim 360 Radio Network, 24/7, Muslim hosted. From religion and current world events, politics, faith and education, marriage and health, music and arts, physical fitness and more. Join AM360, where we're helping to build a model community every day. It's a place where you can help remake the world.
American Muslim 360 is proud to present the Thursday morning edition of A New Day for Al-Islam in America Radio with your host, Yusuf Ramadan.
As-salamu alaykum. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Peace be unto you, in God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. We'd like to welcome everyone to New Day for Islam in America, Muslim 360 edition, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. My name is Yusuf Ramadan, and this is the program that deals with current events, trending topics, and issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. And as we always say, the Muslim perspective is, and always should be, the human perspective. So today, we would like to talk to you about our topic, and that is something that I saw from the Muslim Journal, and it was sent to me. It was written by our Imam, our Sheikh, and friend, Imam Darnell Kareem, who's been also been a guest on this show a few times. And that is, Allah is not man. It's unfortunate that here in 2023 that we're still having to address this topic, not the oneness of Allah, not Tawheed, which we've been talking about. You know, we've been addressing various aspects of this on this program and in our Friday khutbah for the last few weeks, maybe months now or longer. But this, in this particular context, you know, the Imam W.D. Muhammad Rahim Al-Aleh, he said that language of the Nation of Islam was had a magnetic. It was magnetic that it drew people to it, you know. And I remember it did myself as well as others. I'm sure others that are listening in now saying the same thing. It drew us in, you know. It was outstanding themes, two outstanding themes that drew me personally, speaking for me, and I would imagine many others, that was do for self, you know. It just struck a chord with me, you know. And they're still arguing that today. Some are still saying that do for self is not, in terms of economics, at least economics. But I saw it as economics, of course, but also in a logic context, the truth of it. And also it was the white man is the devil. So at that particular time, you know, that was a big theme, you know. And the funny thing is you don't really hear that so much from Minister Farrakhan's version of the Nation of Islam. They don't push that so much, you know, or at least I don't hear it. And I remember coming to my mother, this was in the 1960s, as a young man, and telling my mother that the white man is the devil. And my mother started to cry, you know. And she told me, you know, there was influence. Of course, Malcolm's influence was very great then. And she said to me, I didn't raise you like that. I didn't raise you like that. So, you know, Imam Kareem, he opened up the creator of the heavens and the earth, all universes and systems of knowledge. So the Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Al-Aleh, he gave us that insight. You know, he's the one that they say destroyed the Nation of Islam because he opened it up to white people and others, you know, to join the organization to become Muslims, you know. I've heard that's part of their critique of Imam Muhammad, you know, that he destroyed the businesses, you know. And the Imam gave us, you know, we'll go into that a little bit more. The Imam told us that the businesses, you know, they had a face, they had an illusion of being successful, but they weren't really, many of them weren't really able to hold their own in terms of paying taxes and doing those things, with the employees and workman's comp and things of that nature. They weren't able to hold their own in many aspects of running a successful business, you know. So it looked a certain way. It gave the illusion, you know, of success. So we'll go into that, you know. Although of course it had many great benefits, doing for self had many great benefits for us, that it showed a face to a people, the African American people, of doing for self, of what we could do, you know. Even to this day, people are not doing things because they're claiming that we haven't gotten into the article yet, but they're claiming that there are other groups, Africans and other, you know, it's a big theme now, the immigrants that are coming, right? The immigrants that are coming is a huge theme, you know, that they're talking about now, especially here in New York City. You know, they had a big demonstration here at a hospital that was for mentally ill people that I didn't live too far from in my earlier years of being married, you know, my first years of being married. Creedmoor, it employed a lot of people, and it's in Queens. And so they opened that up for 1,000 people. And it's a big controversy. They had a big demonstration out there. The people were saying that, you know, men, 1,000 males, across the street from a school, and they weren't happy with that idea, you know. And so evidently it's caused a rift, somewhat of a rift between the mayor of New York and the governor of New York, who's always had, which they're insisting that they still have, a good relationship. But sometimes, you know, you disagree with people. So that disagreement, you know, and the mayor has gotten into a disagreement about the lack of support, financial support from the federal government. So that causes a problem. This being a political year where people are, you know, they have their eyes towards the White House and whether President Biden is going to be reelected or going to even run for reelection. He's saying that he is. But many of us remember him teasing us when he first got it, because people had concerns about his age, et cetera. I know I remember him teasing us with, I might be a one-term president. Some of you may not remember that, but I do. You know, it's quite possible that I would only be a one-term president, making his administration a little bit more palatable to people that thought, well, he's a little old, and he really wasn't an overwhelmingly popular candidate to begin with. He was not. He really wasn't. If you remember, Bernie Sanders had to be sabotaged by the Democratic Party because he was the one that was making the inroads. And President Obama reached out to those other people, Pete Buttigieg and others that were still running, and Amy Klobuchar and others, and asked them to drop out, which they did, which opened up the field for President Biden. So he's never been a real, and his numbers now only is saying 41% favorability. So he's never been a popular person, you know. He wasn't like a seen as a transformative candidate like President Obama, you know, people looking for hope and change, you know. Really, you know, Biden was was really just a person who was not Donald Trump, who was not Donald Trump. So that was his biggest selling point. He's not Donald Trump. So we will hopefully weave all of these themes into our discussion, but we know that that is on the top of a lot of people's minds. Some of these things, maybe not on yours, but I hope that you have been keeping up with these current events, you know, and that's what this show deals with, current events, trending topics and issues of concern from the Muslim perspective. So Imam Darnell Kareem says, with God's name, the merciful benefactor, the merciful redeemer. And he quotes the Holy Quran, say, God is one. He begets not, nor is he begotten, and there is nothing like unto him. Allah forgiveth not that partners should be set up with him, but he forgive anything else to whom he please. To set up partners with Allah is to devise a sin, most heinous indeed. The Holy Quran, the final revelation from Allah, which is Surah or chapter 4:116. And we seek his assistance, we seek him for forgiveness, and we believe in him, and we witness that there is none divine, none to be worshipped except Allah alone. There is no partner with him in the rule of the heavens and the earth. We witness that Muhammad is the last prophet of Allah, to whom the Quran was revealed. This is also important. This is also important because they're calling other people prophets. They're quick to call people prophets. I just saw them, a young lady, a young African-American lady who's speaking, a Christian woman who's speaking on various biblical themes, et cetera. They call her a prophet. And I remember here in New York, an individual called, used to call himself Prophet Jordan. You may have seen him, Prophet Jordan. You know, he kind of fallen out of favor, and he called his wife a prophetess, a prophetess. And I met him. I met him. You know, he a friend of mine who was one of his top followers, a Christian brother that I do, and also probably his most famous follower was Reverend Run. He became a reverend too, from Run DMC, the hip hop group, and they called me to come down and meet with him to talk about his security needs. He was becoming very popular. I don't know if you were familiar with him, but in New York area, he was very popular. He had quite a following. In fact, he was on television quite a bit. He had Reverend Run on there with him. I believe Reverend Sharpton came on with him. Talked about him, and he was selling quite a few books. He had a very popular television series. He was one of the television evangelists. So Imam Kareem goes on, we seek his assistance, we seek him for forgiveness, and we believe in him, and we witness that there is none divine, none to be worshipped except Allah, God alone. There is no partner with him in the rule of the heavens and the earth. We witness that Muhammad is the last prophet of Allah to whom the Quran was revealed. Our Lord, surely we have heard a caller calling us to faith that we believed in our Lord and we have believed. O Allah, guide us. Forgive us our faults and grant us the blessing of faith. Today we are a new people, remembering those who paved the way for us, that we are here today to continue on their sacrifices, even though they are no longer with us. But we will live in their spirit, following the ultimate goal of W.D. Farr, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and his son, Imam W.D. Muhammad, to come into our true identity that was lost during slavery. Imam W.D. Muhammad accomplished the ultimate goal of giving the community a clear perception of the revealed book, the Quran, and the right perception of God, the creator of all that exists. And, you know, before I go further into this wonderful explanation by Imam Darnell Kareem, you know, I was online. One of the imams had sent me an early video of Imam W. Muhammad, you know, and teaching. And some brother came on. I don't really know who it is. You don't really know who people are when you're online. They can claim to be a man. It might be a woman. And you don't have to be online to do that nowadays. But they can claim a certain name, a certain affiliation. They don't have to be that at all. Anybody can say it. But the brother, I don't know if it was a brother. He was holding himself up to be a brother. And he said, I always hated Wallace. I always listened to this mad man. And the man was breaking it down, you know, concepts, breaking it down so wonderfully. He could say, and I remember they talked about Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, that he was a mad man. He was a forger and a mad man, you know. And a brief explanation of the changes that came. Our history of the original Nation of Islam, founded by W.D. Ford, who had chosen Honorable Elijah Muhammad as the leader, builder of this community, and who quickly disappeared, as Ibn Muhammad told us in the history of his mission. So they're fond of saying, quite fond of saying, we don't believe in a mystery God. But they tell us that W.D. Ford was God in person. Isn't he a mystery? I know he is to me. That's not a mystery. How he came in and left rather quickly and left the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in charge. It's a mystery to me. And I'm sure people who are, you know, the Quran talks about those who can dazzle you with their speech. You can make anything sound palatable. You can make anything sound, you know, somewhat sensible, as ridiculous as it is. You know, we only have to listen to people that look at the current events and things that's going on today and hear their characterization of it. And people are saying now that, you know, former president, ex-president Trump, that his criticism of and even threats of the prosecutors and judges in his cases, you know, that's just free speech. That's just free speech. Now you're coming down on free speech. Now you're stopping free speech. You know, so you can defend anything, you know, and Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, said, beware of the person, you know, who is skillful, you know, with words, you know, that they can, you get in court and people can argue anything. You know, when they were telling us that cigarettes cause cancer, you bring in experts, the top doctors and scientists from the top schools, from Harvard and Yale, and I can go right to that same Harvard, Yale, and Princeton and get another guy that graduated from the same class, man or woman, and come in and argue the opposite. You know, when I was in high school, I was on a debate team, and they taught us, you know, that concept that you would argue in this issue. If you saw the debaters, the great debaters, you know, with Denzel Washington, great movie, and they would say, okay, you're going to argue for such and such, and then you would make argument. Then they would say, okay, now argue against it. Well, how can I argue against it? I believe in that. And that's how they teach you. Rhetoricians. These people just talk a bunch of nonsense, okay? They know it's nonsense, but they're experts at it. They know $50 words. So it sounds like ostensibly they're saying something that makes sense, and they're just talking pure nonsense, okay? Ford was leaving the leadership with his father, Elijah Muhammad, our late honorable benefactor in so many ways. It appeared that the language of black supremacy and defiance of the black people was a provision for transformation that created the Nation of Islam, which was skillfully worked on. Mr. W.D. Ford Muhammad, founder of the Nation of Islam, who left it to his student, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as the builder of the Nation of Islam. There was no accounting when Mr. Ford told anyone that he was God in flesh. Okay? He was God in flesh. So we have some very important announcements for you, you know, and we don't want to go past that time. It's important that we bring these that we bring these announcements to your attention, okay? And so please, you listen to New Day Thought Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. And don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a while.
Peace be with you and welcome into Positive Solutions to Critical Issues, hosted by yours truly, Dr. Jamal Rashid and Instructor Henry Hasid. This program is sociologically as well as psychologically inclined, with Fitler as its base. We examine the root seed to multiple effects that impact our holistic daily lives. So tune in each and every Thursday morning from 7 to 8 Eastern Standard Time here on American Muslim 360. Thank you and have a pleasant day.
God's peace be upon you. God's love be upon you. God's compassion be upon you, the one soul of humanity. May we let it be in thought and in action. On behalf of CWSC Intelligentsia, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation, where your intellect is respected and your voice protected, American Muslim 360, the Speakers Bureau, the Model Community National Resource Directory, the Volunteer Human Resource Network, Scholarship, the Learning Lab, Ambassadors, National Leadership Advisory Council, Internship, Leadership Development Council, the Think Tank, Strategic Family Institute, the Bookstore. May we share completely humanity in spirit and in form, from thought to action. God's peace, God's love, God's compassion. Assalamu alaikum.
And we're back. So we just wanted to start back, continue on where we left off. Where we left off was Imam Darnell Kareem telling us there's no accounting where Mr. Farr told anyone that he was God in the flesh. Let history show that we are not in the belief of a human being God in any human. This is strictly not us who were assisted in our Islamic growth and development by the son of Elijah, Imam W.D. Muhammad, who was predicted by Allah before his birth that Wallace would transition the Nation of Islam into a mission not seen before by the Nation of Islam followers. After the passing of his father and Imam Muhammad becoming the leader of his father's community, one of the first things he began to clarify, to work and labor hard within his lifetime, was to first establish the right concept of God in al-Islam and the life example of Prophet Muhammad. The seal of the prophets, peace be upon it. And you know, I had the pleasure of meeting and spending some time with the Imam's oldest brother, Emmanuel, you know, and he recounted some great personal stories, you know, to me, and of his early life, he even said that he was the first rabbi, because he told us the story of he said everybody thinks we always had a house. We didn't. We had an apartment. We lived in an apartment, and Mr. Fard came with, he had a brand new car. I believe he said it was a Buick. He said it was the prettiest car we'd ever seen. You know, we lived in a economically depressed area. We didn't see many brand new cars in that area. And he parked the car in front of the building that we lived in, and I was outside. He was saying he was outside, and he told me, he put me on post. He told me to guard that car for him. So he said, as he said, I was the first FOI, you know. And he went on to tell me how when his father died, Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and he helped to wash the body, and he said, in his words, he said, other members of the Nation of Islam, he said, they told me to my face that I was a liar, that he had not, in fact, died. Such was the devotion that people have, you know, and had to Honorable Elijah Muhammad. They didn't believe that he was dead. They refused to believe it. So he says, Imam Kareem says, after the passing of his father and Imam Muhammad becoming the leader for his father's community, one of the first things he began to clarify, to work and labor hard within his lifetime, was to first establish the right concept of God and al-Islam, and the life example of Muhammad, the last seal prophet of the prophets. And, you know, I'm looking at another crazy man on YouTube. They came on there and said that the way that Imam W.D. Muhammad became the leader of the Nation of Islam upon his father's death, after the passing of his father, he bullied his way into it. He bullied his way. Now, they have to make up their mind. Is Imam W.D. Muhammad, Rahim Allah Alayh, is he this soft character, you know, that opened it up to all people, including white people, and came away from the militancy of the Nation of Islam? Or is he, I mean, what is it? You got to make up your mind. He bullied his way into it. This is what he said. I don't even want to tell you his name because I don't want to popularize this guy any more than he already popularized him. But this is the kind of nonsense that you find on the internet. W.D. Ford, in his whole mission, never told his followers he was God. As a child, growing up in the close-knit Nation of Islam with my pioneering father, Carl, I remember the words like the Son of Man, but never God, who created the heavens and the earth. Gloria, my wife, the daughter of a great pioneer, Viola Kareem, who was the Honorable Elijah Muhammad's personal secretary, my father, Carl, was incarcerated with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and was his personal barber. I only mentioned their names to verify that we were around the earliest pioneers of the Nation of Islam, and we knew the language of Elijah and W.D. Ford. And, you know, it reminded me of a brother I haven't thought about for a long time. May Allah forgive me, sent me into paradise. He was a pioneer also, Brother Walter, that was with us. Of course, he used to be at Temple number 7 in Harlem, but he was out in Queens with us at the Queens Center, which later became Masjid Nuruddin. And he told me of a story that he had met the Honorable Elijah Muhammad one time, and a truck passed by showing you the good common sense that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad tried to give to us. A truck passed by, provisions, you know, a pork. That truck was delivering pork. And he said that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad looked at him and said, Brother Walter, would you eat some? Would you eat pork to save your life? He said, well, I was feeling like I was put on the spot. You know, and they weren't familiar with the Quran saying that it's permissible to eat pork to save your life. He said, I thought for a long time before I answered my leader, and I said, dear Holy Apostle, I believe I would. And he said, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to him, I always liked you, Brother Walter. I always liked you, you know. So it was showing that, you know, some people, and you might not think that it has any significance today, but one of the brothers in our masjid called me and told me that a sister contacted him, said her son was incarcerated in a jail. It wasn't a prison, it was a jail up in the state of Maine, and that they're trying to force him to eat pork. They're trying to force him to eat pork. And he said, how are they forcing him to eat pork? They have vegetables and fruit and other things. They may not have a lot of fruits in these days, but they have vegetables, even if they only canned vegetables and things like that. How are they forcing him to eat pork? He put me on with her. I said, well, tell me what's going on, because I don't know that to be true, you know, in most days. She said, yeah, it's a town up in Maine, and they only giving him sandwiches, pork sandwiches, and that's all they're feeding him. And he tells them, get that crap out of my face. Well, that's not the way to talk, first of all. That's not too intelligent, talking like that. But sister wrote me. Maybe it was the same day or the day before. And she told me of a sister. She texted me. She told me of a sister that was in Rikers Island. And she said, she needs money. She needs you to send money orders or send money orders or a check to her attorney so that she can get kosher or halal food. Now, I know for a fact that they serve kosher and halal on Rikers Island, and you don't have to buy it. You only have to sign up to be on the list of those that get halal food. So this is a lot of things, you know, and she said, oh, maybe she's lying to me. I said, I'm not guessing. I'm telling you for what I know that they have it, you see. So a lot of people, they only become real Muslims, staunch Muslims, when they're under pressing circumstances, you know. I'm wondering why they're calling me. Who is his imam? Since he's ready to starve to death before he eats some pork, you calling me. I don't know him or his mother. Imam Donald Kareem and his wife, Gloria Kareem, were both students of Professor Jamil Diab as children in the early years of the Nation of Islam. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad employed Dr. Diab, a Palestinian refugee, to teach Arabic and Quran to the children of the Nation of Islam. How many of y'all knew that? Along with his son, Wallace D. Muhammad. Certainly the esoteric, mystic language was used only to awaken the minds, and I would translate that word mystic into mystery, to awaken the minds of the African-American people to begin thinking for themselves and not be hung up on what was done to their ancestors during slavery. I, Darnell Kareem, for all of my 83 years, grew up with the children of Elijah and Sister Clara, and we were in classes together throughout our childhoods. There was never any teaching of W.D. Farrar being God in our school learning. See, this is important. This is extremely important because there are young people that are being influenced by that teaching today that don't know this. Referring back to Imam Muhammad's teachings, W.D. Farrar teachings had obvious contradictions, which served as a means to arouse our curiosity. But he worked hard to get the members to question everything. Farrar, in spite of his myths and fictional language, was trying to reform the social habits and thinking of the discarded black man of America. Most of our people were uneducated and worldly naive, and many of them were brilliant but never had the opportunity to receive formal education. One such person was, in fact, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, who as a child received no more than 3 years of elementary school education. He came to the North from Georgia, the Deep South, with no more education than that. But he was able, brilliant, with that little education to contain his volatile circumstances around his followers and lead them to better moral behavior and more respectable lifestyles and away from white supremacy thinking. This tells us that this man must have had a great mind, although he just didn't get the opportunity to be formally educated, as was the case for many of his followers. I believe they were of the same situation or circumstances. We turn to our Islamic beliefs, practices, and what we stand for. We believe that there is one creator for all people who has created every single thing, as most religious people believe. That includes Muslims, Christians, and Jews. They may express it differently, but that is the belief in most. One God, one creator. So we're going to take another little break and bring you some important announcements. You listen to New Day for Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, the number one Islamic radio station in the nation. So don't touch that dial. We'll be back in a short while.
Have you ever heard the phrase, don't drink and drive? Just imagine the health care costs and the lives or the families and marriages and careers that maybe, just maybe, could have been saved if we just change the sentence to two words instead of four, don't drink. A public service message from American Muslim 360 and CWSC.
Don't drink.
With Allah's name, most merciful benefactor, most merciful redeemer, we are grateful to announce that during the month of Ramadan, here on American Muslim 360, yours truly, Kareem Hamid and Michael Hameen, shall share the Ramadan sessions of Imam.
As-salamu alaykum. Peace be with you. This is Kareem Hameed, General Manager for American Muslim 360, announcing a new program for our parent corporation, BWSC, call Eyes on Our Community. While we are being challenged by the current public health environment and policy of social distancing to prevent the spread of coronavirus, some older Americans being urged to stay at home could unfortunately wind up being out of sight, out of mind. If you're a senior or disabled person and need assistance, call 910-317-0297, and one of our volunteers will be assigned to call you and help connect with government agencies, nonprofits, civic or faith-based or other institutions addressing elderly and disabled needs. We don't want a single person to fall through the cracks. Call 910-317-0297 and help is just a phone call away. A public service announcement from the CWSC and AM.
And we're back. So we'll give you a little bit more of this excellent presentation by Imam Kareem. And then we'll open up the phones for your questions and comments, if you have any. We believe that Allah, God, has missioned prophets and his messengers to the people with the same revelations. We believe that revelation is better than science. It is eternal truth. And it will hold up under all tests. What we believe as Muslims, that Muhammad, to whom the Quran was revealed, is his last prophet, peace be upon him. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad demonstrated his belief by teaching and showing that he and his sons made the holy trip to Mecca and performed the Umrah and kissed the black stone and made prayer, dua. He said, when I kiss this black stone, it's like I kiss myself. And I pray to Allah that my followers will be among the leaders in the world. We used to always say this prayer at the beginning of all our meetings in the Nation of Islam. It was called the Prayer of Abraham. And a verse in Quran, Surah 6, 162. Surely I have turned myself to thee, O Allah, who originated the heavens and the earth, trying to be upright. And I am not of the polytheists. Surely by prayers and my sacrifices, my life and my death, are all for Allah, the Lord of all the worlds. No associates has he, and this am I commanded, and I am of those who submit. Translation by Imam W.D. Muhammad. We prayed in the Nation of Islam, O Allah, you are the king. You are my Lord, and I am your servant. I have wronged myself, and I confess my faults. So grant me protection against all my faults, and forgive me all my faults. For none can grant protection against faults but you. Guide me to the best of morals, for none can guide to the best of morals but you. And turn away from me the evil and indecent morals, for none can turn away the evil and indecent morals but you. We used to say that prayer in every meeting without fail. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad also published a 5 daily prayers book for our daily prayers, and you will not see defarred in that book. Lastly, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad had a vision in 1948 that he wanted his followers to learn Quranic Arabic so that they would be able to understand the religion, al-Islam, and the language in the Quran. So we'll open up the phones for your questions and comments. I don't see anybody in the queue, but press 1 on your phone. We'll bring you in if you would like to contribute to this discussion. I don't see any hands. Okay. All right. At this particular time. If you would like to, all right. 914-434. I think I know who this is. Please state your name and where you're calling from, please.
Yeah, this is Muhammad Sharif calling from Outrun, New York. Assalamu alaikum.
Assalamu alaikum, my dear brother.
Yeah, right. Now,
what would you like to say?
I would like to say concerning Sheikh. Now, all three now Muhammad's leadership. After a person called Sheikh
What's his name? Well, after he passed, James Shabazz, I believe it was. After he passed, Imam Muhammad didn't call anyone El Sheikh. This came about to take after Imam Muhammad's passing. He never called anyone Sheikh after James Shabazz passed. That's the first thing I wanted to say there. And then the Mr. Islam, as you were saying about the businesses, if we talk to anyone, I deliver to the stake and takes and places like that. Like you say, there was the people who all were working there was being overpaid. Sometimes they wasn't even getting paid.
Right. That's right.
And when the Imam became the leader, eliminated all of that, put down all those, and he sold off to people who had the business mind and things like that, and they bought and took over and acquired those businesses and made them productive. Like one brother out of New York, what's the name that he's had sick and take businesses, doing well, and he moved to Atlanta. Can't think of his name right now. But then his son had a number of businesses in the Atlanta area, and now they moved on to business in Mexico and all of that. So those businesses were not producing, and people were underpaid, not even getting paid. And those speaking about the immigrants coming in and taking over. Yeah, I guess rightfully so. The man said, our number one priority is education. He said, don't be of no master yet. No, you be of schools and educate your people. You can have the Juma, the Talim, the weddings and things like that in the school. The mosque master yet is sitting there on use for 2 days out of the week, Friday, and sometimes not even on Sundays. So no, we have to approach. Number one priority is education. So I guess others are listening to what the Imam is saying. He said they're not listening to the leader. So maybe we should go in and take over some of these things last year. And that's what they're doing. They come and take them over. And then we can do about it, say about it, because Imam say we are schools and not last year. So they're well aware that we're going against the Imam's leadership. Concerning President Obama. Now, he wasn't the first choice for president. Now, Muhammad told us that people would be willing to support General Colin Powell as leader of the community. The second choice, well, the first choice, he met Muhammad himself. He said, I would be the leader of the community. But the second choice was Colin Powell, and the third choice, President Obama, he was the third choice that the people chose. And why did he leave him? President Obama said himself, he said, maybe I'll be a one-time president. If my family, my wife, and I would accept it, I would be a one-time president. But no, they made him a two-term president. Why? Because they didn't want to use him to push, promote homosexuality. He supported it. He pushed it. Matter of fact, he even tried to go out of the country with Africa, but he basically ran out of Africa trying to bring in homosexuality. So that's why they made him a second-term president. So there's a whole lot there. He's trying to clear up the records here for those that don't know. Thank you for taking my comments, Ma'am Yusuf.
Well, anytime. Thank you very much for being a long-time listener and participant. And support it. Thank you. All right. Now we got 972-467. State your name and where you calling from, please.
Ishmael Family, Dallas, Texas. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum assalam.
I was listening to the article. I'm enjoying that article. I have to go back and read it myself. You were saying in 1948 that Elijah Muhammad had a vision to teach us Quranic Arabic. So with that understanding, is it theorized that Master Farad, that wasn't his intention to get us to true al-Islam, that Elijah Muhammad made that transition? And I'm saying that because it's been theorized that Farad wanted us just to be fruit so that the other immigrants can come pick us off. So I just want your thoughts on that. Thank you.
Well, you know, I have heard that the imam, and I heard the imam say before, and I think that the Imam Kareem even referred to it, that some of the contradictions in what Farad was giving us was meant to make us look deeper into it, you know. Some of the contradictions, what he was teaching us, and then the Quran. So I've heard the imam say that. So I think the imam was trying to get us to see that you know, he did want us eventually to come into the actual understanding of al-Islam, you know, but that he thought that it would come from Imam W.D. Muhammad himself, which it did, you know. Unfortunately, a lot of people, you know, are not grateful to that. They should be. Like I said last week, I told them during the khutbah that, you know, even that word khutbah, even that word jummah, we hadn't heard that before. Not that there weren't other so-called Sunni Muslims in America, or black Sunni Muslims in America, there was. But those terms and that teaching hadn't become popularized in the public view until Imam W.D. Muhammad began to teach that, you see. He took the chairs out of the temples. He took the chairs out. I spoke on that last week. You know, now we have a lot of older, you know, and sisters, and we have chairs, you know, that are sitting in. But so much so that I had to tell the young people not to sit in the chairs. There's nothing wrong with your back, et cetera. So I need you all to sit on the floor. You know, they came in, some new shahadas, et cetera, and then Allah has blessed us to be able to teach. And, you know, they thought, oh, you just sit in the chairs. And I had to show them to sit down. So we still have about seven minutes left. If you press one on your phone, we'll bring you into the queue. And you can ask your question or make a comment. But I think that this topic, and I'm glad to see that it was also it's also in the Muslim Journal, you know. And Imam Kareem continues, I was one of those first students, along with my wife, Gloria, my sister, Zahira, Wallace, Imam W.D. Muhammad, his brother, Akbar, who was sent to study at Al-Azhar University and becoming Dr. Akbar Muhammad, my brother, Leroy, and others. We were taught for nearly 10 years. Imam W.D. Muhammad said once that there was a sign of W.D. Farad that he left with us, of him holding the Quran, that if you keep reading it, you will find the real God, Creator. We thank Allah the Almighty for these great leaders, W.D. Farad, Elijah Muhammad, Imam W.D. Muhammad, and especially the faithful pioneers who prayed to see today that we are now a new people with our new minds, our own focus, our own independence, and have been placed among the leaders in the world. We follow and believe in the international community of Muslims under the Quran and life example of Muhammad, the last prophet, peace be upon him. Allah says, but I am the one who exists alone, meaning no forces to aid him. He is the Lord, cherisher, caregiver, and sustainer of the worlds, the systematic order that God is one. He is the Lord of the systems of knowledge, and we pray to Allah to unite our hearts. Yeah, so about Imam Darnell Kareem, assistant to Imam W.D. Muhammad in Islamic studies and childhood friend. Darnell Kareem has been a practicing member of the Muslim community for over 74 years. His entire education was attained under the direction of the University of Islam,
/Cry Muhammad school system of the Nation of Islam. Imam Darnell Kareem began his studies in the Arabic language and Islamic studies at the age of 11. His instructors of the Arabic language were several. However, the most effective teacher was Professor Jamil Diab, who was his instructor for 10 years. Professor Diab was a Palestinian Muslim and an Al-Azhar University graduate located in Cairo, Egypt. Imam Darnell's childhood friend and classmate was Imam W. Dean Muhammad Wallace Muhammad, who became the first worldwide respected Muslim leader to millions. Among other classmates include his wife Gloria Zahira and the younger brother Imam Muhammad, who became known as Dr. Akbar Muhammad, becoming an associate professor at Binghamton University. So we got a few minutes. If you all would like to ask a question, we'll wait till the last minute. You're probably doing so already. But if you want to ask a question or make a comment, this would be the time to do it. And I had an appointment that I had to go to for a car, and they canceled it. So I was going to have to rush out of here early anyway. But alhamdulillah, we're able to stay with you for these last few minutes. I don't see anyone in the queue. All right. So these are definitely critical issues as referred to by Dr. Jamal Rashid and Imam Henry Hasib. These are critical issues as well. You know, the internet can be good, just like the television. You know, the imam used to refer to HBO as human body odor. Human body odor. Odor. You can be watching something good and then have to go. So, okay, here's 314-833. State your name. Where you calling from, please?
Yes, sir. Assalamu alaikum. Imam Yusuf Ramadan, Mark Shaheen from the STL, the Gateway City of St. Louis, Missouri.
Yes, sir.
Alhamdulillah. Just real quickly here, I know you don't have much time left, but this surely indicates, you know, with the hiring of Professor Jamil Ziad that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad did for his sons, both Akbar and Wallace at that time, Darnell Kareem, Gloria, and his brother Leroy, it clearly states that he was being groomed. Imam Muhammad was groomed to learn the Quran and all. And I do believe that W.D. Farad actually initiated that also in that regard. There's more could be said about that, and inshallah you'll continue maybe next week. Thank you so much. But this is very important. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. Okay, 949-689. Yes, sir.
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Imam Ramadan. This is Brother Melvin calling out of the Atlanta area. And I just wanted to ask, when you mentioned that Farah Muhammad never said that he was Allah, I'm just more curious as to where did that actually come from, that idea? That's my question.
Well, that's a very good question. You know, as I see, and we only have a few minutes left, but I'll look into that a little bit further, and I will, in fact, I'll reach out to Imam Darnell Kareem, as he is our living testimony, our historian that's still with us. So it's very important that we speak to these pioneers and get them on record, you know, saying these things going forward, because there's a lot of young people that are very sincere. I know some young people, or younger people, and some older people that are followers of Minister Farrakhan, brothers that I love, you know. They just got it wrong, you know. And so that's where we're at today. But that's an excellent question. Excellent question. I will look into that when it first started to be said. I saw Imam W.D. Muhammad in 1960, a video, and he opened up. Do you know that he opened up almost exactly the way he was opening up during his time in leadership? He did not open up with came in the person of Master Farouk. So we got about 90 seconds left, and so we thank you very much for that question, but that we're going to look into that. Okay, hopefully we'll have an answer
thank
for you,
much,
inshallah, next week. Thank you.
Thank you, alhamdulillah.
So, yes, we thank all of you for listening to New Day Found Islam in America, American Muslim 360 edition, number one Islamic radio station in the nation. I think that was very important that the Imam Donald Kareem pointed that out, you know, that W.D. Fard never referred to himself as God, as a lying person. And in fact, I remember Imam talking to his mother, telling us about how he spoke to his mother. He said that he said prophet was too high a title for him. So he said, "Mommy, if prophet was too high a title for him, where are we getting God from?" That W.D. Fard said himself that prophet was too high a title for him. So we thank all of you for listening. Please continue to support CWSC and American Muslim 360, the Muslim Journal, all Muslim media. Until next time, we pray that you have a blessed day. Assalamu alaikum.